All right. Let's open our Bibles up to Genesis chapter 34. We're getting into the troubles that... How many of you were like me when you got saved, you thought, my troubles are over? It doesn't happen that way. Your troubles change. Let me just say that. But they're not over. You have a different direction. But Genesis chapter 34, Jacob's made a change in his life. He's now going to do things God's way. But that doesn't mean several things. It doesn't mean that you're not going to reap the consequences of previous stupidity. You know, the wages of sin is death, all right? We know that, but there are consequences. Give me a scripture that talks about consequences of our sins. It's in Galatians. I'm not sure what 5:23 is.
He that soweth to his flesh shall the flesh reap corruption.
Is that 5:23? That's very good, right?
Oh,
okay. All right. Well, I'm thinking of Galatians 6:9-10. It says, whatsoever man soweth, plants, that's what he's going to reap. If you plant corn, what are you going to get?
Corn.
Right. So, if I'm born again, if I'm saved, will I reap the consequences of a sinful life, maybe doing drugs or adultery? I don't know. Will you still reap the consequences for your sins, even though you're saved?
Yeah.
Most definitely. Okay. Can the consequences be lessened after you're saved? Yes, you can lessen the consequences. Getting saved, getting born again, can reduce the impact of the consequences for your sin. But just because you're saved, God doesn't take away the consequences. Like, for example, before I was saved, I was a rebel, and I drove fast cars, and I got into 3 accidents, and I lost my left leg in an accident. Now I'm saved. Do I get my leg back?
No.
No. I still have to live with the consequences of my actions even before I'm saved. So now that I'm saved, and Jacob is going to reap the consequences of his life. It took him till he was 97 before he got born again. So here in Genesis chapter 34, he's going to, his lifestyle and his own rebellion against God is going to start to catch up with him. Hosea 8, we need, go ahead, Barry, you're fast and furious here. Let's look at Hosea chapter 8 and verse 7.
They have sown the wind, and they shall reap the whirlwind. It hath no stalk, the bud shall yield no meal. If so be it yield, the strangers shall swallow it up.
All right, that's just an unusual phrase. The first part says they've sown, planted, the wind. And they reap what?
The whirlwind.
What's another word for the whirlwind?
Tornado, is it?
Yeah, whirlwind or tornado. Tornado. So the wind is bad enough. A whirlwind is much worder, much wilder, much stronger. So the consequences, if I plant one kernel of corn, I usually will get a stalk with 3 ears of corn. Each ear has hundreds of corn kernels on it. So whatever you plant, you'll reap more of, is the point. And that's what Jacob's going to learn here. God told Jacob to leave the land of Laban, that was the land of his family where he got his wife, and to return to the land of his own kindred where Abraham was. The implication from the Lord was for Jacob to return to the place where he had made a covenant agreement with the Lord, and it was at Bethel, B-E-T-H-E-L, that's your fill-in, it was at Bethel. So your fill-in there in your book, in your pages here, we're kind of working back and forth. The fill-in was at Bethel. Yes, it's okay. It was at Bethel that, meaning the house of God, where Jacob and Abraham made an altar, and called on the name of the Lord. And you'll find that in Genesis 12 and also Genesis 28. It was at the house of God that Jacob made a vow about 30 years earlier. As of Genesis 34, a period of about 20 years has elapsed and he has not honored his vows that he made. If you make a vow, how serious is that? It's very serious. Yeah. God takes it very serious. That's why when you go and you get married and you make a vow, this is my one and only, till death do us part. God expects us to keep that vow when we make, and that's why you don't make vows flippantly. It's not bad to make vows. It is wrong to make a vow and not keep it. And so Jacob has not kept his vows that he made to God back at Bethel. And so Jacob has in, some Bible scholars believe Jacob lived here in this place called Shalem for about 10 years. Jacob has not wholly obeyed the Lord. He did indeed go back to the land of Canaan. However, he didn't go back to a place called Bethel. Instead, he went to a place called Shalem, a city that belonged to Shechem, a Canaanite. Jacob is about 15 miles from where he ought to be physically, but spiritually he is further away than he should be. Mm-hmm. So when you have a map and you see Israel, modern day Israel is about like that, okay? Jacob has come back into the promised land and he's come to a place called Shechem. But Bethel is only 15 miles away. God told him to go to Bethel. And Bethel means what? House of God. Who named it Bethel? It used to be known as Luz. Alright? Place of light. But instead, it became known as Bethel. Who named it Bethel?
Jacob.
No. It had been actually named by Abraham as Bethel. Jacob also calls it, well, this is Bethel, because that's where he saw the angels going up and down the ladder. All right? But he's that close going into Bethel, and he didn't go all the way. And if you find anything true in your life, it'll be your worst decisions that you'll ever make are when you didn't go all the way for God. When you said, I'll go back to church, but I'll only go on Sunday mornings. But you won't go Sunday night, Wednesday night. You'll go just short of obeying perfectly. So God told him to go to Bethel. He only goes this far and he stops. And that's where he sits, some people will say, for up to 10 years. His family is doing things they should not be doing. We're going to get to that when we get to chapter 35. They actually end up in a fight and they murder a whole town. In this chapter, his daughter, Jacob's only daughter, starts a chain of events that propels him back finally to the house of God. And furthermore, her inquisitive and wild nature is the catalyst that causes much bloodshed. So let's start with A. Genesis 34, 1 to 6, and I'll start with Edward. Would you read verses 1 to 6 in chapter 34?
And Dinah, the daughter of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Avite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and defiled her. And his soul clave unto Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the damsel and spark kindled unto the damsel. And Shechem spake unto his father Hamor, saying, get me this damsel to wife. And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah his daughter. Now his sons were with his cattle in the field, and Jacob held his peace until they were come. And Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out unto Jacob to commune with him. And the sons of Jacob came out of the field.
No, when? Only just verse 6.
Okay,
just to verse 6. All right. So here we got this. That's your first fill in there, Dinah. All right. Dinah. Her name means justice. It is the female name for Dan. So your first fill in there is Dinah, D-I-N-A-H. And she's a young daughter. We're not exactly sure how old, but it's the feminine name for Dan. So next time you see Dan, you know, just look at him.
Means justice.
His name means judged. Dan means judged. Dinah means justice. Now, she's the only daughter that's mentioned that belongs to Jacob. Her mother's name was Leah, and Leah was not Jacob's favorite wife. Who was Jacob's favorite wife?
Rachel.
Now, Jacob was a dummy, all right? He fell in love with one girl, hated another girl. Laban tricks him and gives him the second daughter, and he marries. And so he's already committed to Leah, but he still goes ahead and marries Rachel, and then ends up he ends up with four women in his home. He's a, as they say in Ireland, a roid Egypt. But the Bible doesn't give her exact age, but the guess is she's about 15 years old. Now Dinah went out to see the daughters of the land. You see that in verse 1? It says she went out to see the daughters of the land. So what is she doing? Dinah, whose name means justice, is attracted by the other girls. I want you to see something that is very common today. She sees the daughters of the land. You can't read too much into the thing, but she wants to go and see. She wants to see how they live. She wants to see how they dress or whatever. She's attracted to the girls. And who steps in? Who comes into her life? A guy. All right, and it's the same girls, and that's why a father protects his daughter, because he knows how guys think. He knows that daughter may be innocent, probably not, but is only looking innocently, going to the mall just to go shopping. But there's not just girls out there. There are guys. There are predators. So Dinah lived with 11 brothers. All right, they didn't live in houses. But the people in Shechem did. In Shalem, they lived in houses. So if you lived in a tent and you saw the other girls living in houses, how would you feel? You'd feel like a poor person. They live in houses. So she's already looking up to these girls. She's already looking up to the culture. City culture is always looked up to. This town... Shechem, who's this Shechem guy?
The prince.
Yes. His father is sort of the governor of the whole thing. He's a prince. He's next in line. He's a VIP. He's a very important person. When I was in secondary school, there were the popular guys, and then there were the rest of us. And so there were the people who were the most likely to succeed. And this guy, he's up for being, you know, the next ruler, the next governor, the next mayor. He's going to be in charge one day. But in this town, they're called Hivites. What's a Hivite? What people group do the Hivites come from?
Canaanites.
They are Canaanites. And the Canaanites are a wicked pagan group. As a matter of fact, God was so he so despised, he so hated the Canaanites. He said when Israel came in and they lived in the land of the Canaanites, he said, destroy every image you find. An image is an idol, a drawing, a picture, an engraving. Destroy it all, because it will only interest your flesh and only destroy your people and bring you under God's judgment. So they were extremely pagan. They were vile. They actually have found Canaanite pictures and engravings, and they're all very sexual. They're all very, very abominable. Somebody says, well, all she went was she went for a look. She just wanted to go look. Well, how dangerous is a look? How dangerous is it to just be switching the channels late at night. If you, how, do you have any children?
Yeah.
How old are your children?
22.
22.
13.
13.
Two of them, twins.
Okay.
I have five.
Wow.
So the last one is eight.
We have five as well. Let's say you're a 13-year-old, girl or boy. Is your you're twins?
Two boys, yeah.
Two boys at 13. Yeah. All right, so say one of your 13-year-old can't sleep and goes downstairs and turns on Sky Movies. Would you trust them at 11 o'clock watching Sky Movies?
No, I can't do that.
Because a look can lead to a lot of sin, can't it? Mm-hmm. All right. This daughter's grown up in a farm, but I believe she doesn't know what she's getting into. I believe she just doesn't have, but she still gets into trouble. Innocence does not protect you. That's why parents protect their children. So, nobody's watching over her. Her brothers are busy. Her dad is busy working on the farm. But she heads out anyway. Now, Prince Shechem saw her. Shechem is a Hivite. This was the Canaanites. And she liked what she saw. She evidently liked him looking at her. And it says there in verse 2, when Shechem, the son of Hanor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and defiled her. So what does it mean to lay with her? What does that mean? Are they taking a nap?
No.
You know, the Bible is written so a 9-year-old can read it and it doesn't defile their mind. Some of the newer Bibles, actually, I don't know the NIV. What Bible do you have, Faith? What kind of a Bible? Oh, that's the NIV. All right. How does it read verse 2? Can you read out loud chapter 34 and verse 2? Genesis 34, verse 2. I didn't check this in the NIV.
It says, when Shechem's son of Hamor, the Hivite, the ruler of the area, saw her, he took her and raped her. His heart was drawn to Dinah's daughter of Jacob. He loved the young woman and spoke tenderly to her.
All right, hold there. All right, do you see the word there? What was the strong word? Raped her. Now, I don't want a 9-year-old reading a Bible that says, and he raped her. I like how it says, and he lay with her. Reason being is a 9-year-old, I have my children read the Bible from the time they're 3 months old. I'm reading it to them. My children have had the King James Bible read to them all the time. But I don't want to be reading the word rape to my children. So lay with her is a just as equal. He took her and he did rape her. That's not the question. But the King James Bible made it very carefully written so that a 9-year-old could read it and not defile their mind. And go, Daddy, what is rape? I don't want to have to describe that. All right? But if you're 19 years old, you know exactly what it's talking about. Okay? So, for example, I'll give you the example where it says in Adam and Eve, and I'm not sure how the NIV has it in Genesis chapter 4, and it says, and Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she bare a son. What does it mean, he knew his wife? Now, no man knows his wife. We're still trying to figure him out. I'm married 30 years. But when it says knew his wife, what does it mean? He had sex with her.
Yeah.
All right. But a 9-year-old, a 6-year-old could read, and Adam knew his wife, and it doesn't go into their head, oh, he had sex with her, because they don't need to know all that stuff. But when they turn 16, 17, 18, then you can explain, he got to know her. He got to know her very intimately. So, but he does lay with her, but it's not consensual. It says he's warming her up, and then he takes and he forcibly lays with Dinah. And this is any father's worst nightmare. Okay, I think he thinks she's the most beautiful person. She's not the same as him. He's very dark skinned. He's in Canaan. Canaan is a people group from Africa. And these are Jews, they're olive color skin. He sees this. And it's funny how the interracial things are much more exciting. And he says, boy, this girl is different. And so he has to have her. So number 7, he forced her to lie with him. He basically defiled her. That's the word you fill in there on number 7. He defiled her. This is premarital sex. You ought to write this down. The best birth control, and it's awful. Do you know how old they want to teach sex education to children in the national schools? They want to start teaching children to name all the body parts when they're 7 years old. At 7 years old, let's show a picture and let's name all the body parts. Why? All I wanted was a shovel and dirt when I was 7 years old. Nobody wanted to know all their body parts. But the best birth control is self-control. It's when you don't have any interest in it. When I was 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, I believe that girls were icky. I believe the most important thing to do with a girl was stay away from her. Amen. And that's a good advice, all right? But here, this sin is called defilement. Let's look at Exodus chapter 31. Francis, if you'll look at Exodus 31, 14.
The Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy and pure. Everyone that defiles it shall surely be put to death. For whosoever doeth in work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among his people.
Alright, now here's the word defile. Now, to defile means to ruin you. And if you're not keeping the Sabbath under the Old Testament, you were defiled and it cost you your life. Let's look at another one. 1 Corinthians 3:17. All the way into the New Testament now.
If any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy, for the temple of God is holy, which the temple you are.
Alright, so where is the temple of God today? Francis, where do you think the temple of God is?
Church.
Mm-hmm. It's your body.
Holy body.
Your body is the temple of the Holy Ghost, which is in you. The Bible says, when you get born again, the Holy Spirit comes into you, and you become a place of worship. You don't have to go to church to worship. You are a place of worship. And if any man defiles the place of worship, that's you, him will God destroy. So you're supposed to take care of your body. You're supposed to keep it clean, because it is a place of worship. But now we need to go back to Deuteronomy chapter 22. So read verse 28 and 29.
If a man finds a damsel that is a virgin, which is not betrothed.
Betrothed means married.
And lay hold on her and lie with her, and they be found. Then the man that lay with her shall give unto the damsel father 50 shekels of silver, and she shall be his wife, because he had humbled her, bringing not with her away all the things.
Alright, yeah, there are, I kind of stayed away from, but I got, there's probably 24 scriptures where it talks about if a man lays with a woman to defile her, or that is not his wife, and so on and so forth. It is, the word defile would be like if I picked up, you know, a fresh pile of cow manure, and I just threw it on Barry, right? How close would you want to stand to Barry after that? You want to get way away from Barry. Now, I just picked up and defiled him, and if you got around him, you go, Barry, where have you been? But I defiled him. I made him so nobody wants to be around him. And when you rape somebody, For when you did some sin, it defiled you and them. That's the key word there. And God talked about, listen, there's honorable sex and there is dishonorable or defiling sex. So number three there, the sin was called defilement. The prince was not satisfied only with looking. He had to touch her. That's your fill in there. He had to touch. 1 Corinthians 7:1 says, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Why? Because you start touching, you start caressing, you start putting your... The old movies would have a guy and he would stretch his arm and end up having his arm around the girl. And it was so innocent. Oh, I'm sorry. But that's only the beginning. He didn't stop with just putting his arm around the girl. So once you start touching, it leads to fornication. And this prince didn't just want to talk to her. He had to touch her. And then he had to rape her. Now, this is probably the first recorded case of date rape. This is probably the first recorded case of your fill-in is date rape. Dinah just happened to be in the wrong place at the right time and paid attention to the advances of the wrong man. Please remember, she just went out to see what was going on. She wanted to visit the daughters of the land, and yet here she is now raped and humiliated.
Sorry, ask a question. Yes, sir. How do you know that she was raped?
Because he took her. He took her. It is a forcible... The words there are force. He took her.
So you will say she wasn't consenting at all?
I'm saying she was not consenting at all. Okay. He went out. She didn't go look at the guys of the land. She went out. She was not interested in getting a guy. She wanted to go see the girls. Now, I don't think she's totally innocent. She wants to go and flirt with the buzz that's going on, flirt with the fun that's going on, but she has no idea how far it will take her. So he comes along. He tries to woo her. I bet she puts up a fight and says, no, I got to go home. And he lay hold on her. That's the forcible words, which mean he took her by force and he lay with her. He forced her. These are the same words that Amnon took with Tamar, his sister-in-law. David's son took his sister and he forced her. He lay with her. She did not want it. So this is a date rape.
Would you say that with Reuben and Bilhah as well?
No, it says he went up under the couch. You have no idea about Bilhah, you mean Bilhah, Jacob's wife.
Yeah.
When Reuben did that, you're not told whether it was consensual. She's a servant. So she doesn't care. As far as I can tell, she kind of doesn't, I don't know if Reuben is forcing her or not. It doesn't say. All right? I think she looked as an opportunity. She's probably not given any interest by Jacob. The only thing she was used for was for sex and for having children, and so she's still a nobody. So here comes Reuben. Maybe this is an opportunity for her to be more powerful. Like Hagar became very powerful when she got pregnant by Abraham. She became very powerful, so much so that Sarah says, get rid of her because I don't want this competition in my home. And so I can only guess with Bilhah. I don't know. All right. Interesting question, though. All right. So here goes Dinah. She goes out just to go see, and she comes back. She's been raped, and she's been humiliated. Shechem, however, has fallen in love. Isn't that a wrong way to fall in love? And yet that's how every TV show says how you should fall in love. You go and have sex, and then you find out, oh, I like this girl. That's the wrong way to fall in love.
Is he really in love, or is he just thinking of the way to change the word today and just say they're in lust? Or?
All I know is, his soul clave unto Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the damsel. I think he truly loves her as best as he can. He's not just, this is not an animal instinct here. I'm sure it is filled with lust, but I think he truly loves her. But he's done it wrong. I know many a man has committed adultery and truly been in love with the woman that he is an adulteress with. He truly loves the other woman, but that doesn't make it right. Okay? So this is why these words are so contradictory, so powerful in application today. You think the Bible doesn't apply today. No, you're reading today's newspaper articles about how people how they fall in love. They fall in love through sex first, and then they go, oh, I truly love this person. That's the wrong way to do it.
Just one more thing about Deuteronomy 22. Is that only to do with Jews? As in, like, I know you mentioned it here, but they wouldn't have gone through with that, would they? Because he was Hivite and she's...
It was only among God's people.
Right. Okay.
Only when you have a culture of God-fearing people. Jeez. That's why you don't impose Deuteronomy on Gentile, on unbelieving. It's very, very hard for somebody who does not know the Bible for them to understand the purpose of these laws and stuff. So no, it's only for Jews.
And when Amnon, obviously they were related, so that wouldn't have they should still.
As a matter of fact, I do not know, because Tamar says, my father will not stop me from being yours. Okay, so evidently the sex was so important that once they had had it, I guess you guys are going to have to be married, even though they were brother and sister, although it was not to be. It was more wrong for them to be toying around and having a freedom of sex, free love. It was more important not to have that than it was to not be brother and sister. Okay? Family reaction. All right? Shechem's in love with Dinah. He wants to marry Dinah. Now, what's scary is Dinah hasn't been allowed to go home, or maybe she doesn't feel like she can go home. So look at the family reaction, verses 7 through 12. John, if you'll read that.
And the sons of Jacob came out of the field when they heard it, and the men were grieved, and they were very wroth, because he had wrought folly in Israel, in line with Jacob's daughter, which thing ought not to be done. And Hamor communed with them, saying, the soul of my son Shechem longeth for your daughter. I pray you give her him to wife, and make ye marriages with us, and give your daughters unto us, and take our daughters unto you. And ye shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade ye therein, and get you possessions therein. And Shechem said unto her father and unto her brethren, let me find grace in your eyes, and what ye shall say unto me I will give. Ask me never so much dowry and gift, and I will give according as ye shall say unto me, but give me the damsel to wife.
Alright, so we have somebody who is intervening now and talking directly to Jacob and to his boys. His name is Hamor. So he's gone and gotten his father to come and intercede for him. To wife. Look at that. Here's pagan people wanting to set up marriages. Alright, so what do we know a marriage is, even among pagan people? What is marriage?
Covenant.
A commitment. Mm. Let this woman be, and it is an honorable commitment of two people to live together for the rest of their life. Even pagan people know the value of a marriage and of wife, of being a wife or a husband. So to wife it's just amazing to me that, why didn't he say, hey, why don't you just overlook this? They were just having fun. This is not serious. No, they wanted to be serious, and they wanted it to be a marriage. Is a prophetic note here that the sons of Jacob already are considered a nation. Look at verse 7. It says, and the sons of Jacob came out of the field when they heard it, and the men were grieved, and they were very wroth, because Hamor's son, Shechem, had created folly in Israel in line with Jacob's daughter. Notice, in Israel. He talked about them as if they were a people group now. So that's very prophetic. In Israel, there had been folly in Israel. Number two, the brothers were grieved, but not only that, they became absolutely furious. They knew it was wrong to do. And this is something else that's true. And I've asked my own sons this. I said, all right, so, you know, how do you feel about dating? How do you feel about falling in love? How do you feel about marriage? Da, 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 da. I said, okay, now imagine that girl that you think that you're in love with is your sister. Would you, if you were their brother, look into that relationship, would you think that their brother would approve of how you're treating or how you're approaching? Treat your future wife like you would want somebody to treat your younger sister. That's how valuable
This is because these guys are going to mess around with sex. Jacob's sons aren't going to be all the angels that they want to think they are. But when it comes to their sister, they're willing to fight to protect her honor and their honor. It's kind of funny, but it's just the way that you should look at things. Jacob, however, is a funny dude. He says, verse 5, and Jacob heard that he, Hamor, had, what's the word? Defiled Dinah, his daughter. And that's all it says. Now his sons were with the cattle in the field, and Jacob held his peace until they were come. And it says, the sons of Jacob came out of the field when they heard it. They were grieved, and they were very angry. Where's Jacob's anger at this? Why isn't Jacob furious?
It seems later on he's suppressing it because he wants to keep the trade or whatever.
Yes. He doesn't want to rock the boat. He doesn't want to make it. He's dwelt among these people for up to 10 years, and he doesn't want to start a war. He's kind of like, okay, all right, I got to get through this. There's got to be a way through this. He's too adaptable. He doesn't react like most fathers would. Now, how would you react? Oh, my goodness. How would you react when you hear of sin among Christians? How do you react? Well, you know, I guess that's how guys are going to be, right? Is that how you're going to react? Well, I don't want to cause a scene.
So, could you say Jacob himself was not so sure? Because he had four wives.
He may have a guilty conscience,
yeah,
you mean?
Yeah.
He may have a guilty conscience. Yeah. But my goodness, you know, when something's wrong, it's wrong. Mm. And even though it may slap you in the face, you still need to be able to deal with it. Right? David had a problem. When he heard about Absalom, and he heard about Tamar, and because Tamar was Absalom's direct sister, and he heard about that going on, he kept his mouth shut too, because of his own sin. So yeah, your own sins will close your mouth when it shouldn't. Right. So it's a good point. Number 5, sin is a reproach. It's a reproach to a nation, a family, and it is one thing where God holds us accountable. This sin was an embarrassment. And Jacob's sins are now coming home to roost. Number 6, Hamor, the father of Jacob, proposes a compromise. That's your fill-in on number 6. A compromise. Now, Hamor and his country are types of the world. Jacob and his family are supposed to be types of God's people. However, judging by the actions of Dinah, Jacob's lack of concern for her actions and the atrocities, upcoming atrocities of Simeon and Levi, you know, their status, their example, are leave much to be desired. They offer a compromise. Hamor and his family offer a compromise to make evil appear good. In verse 9, he says, make you marriages with us. Let's just become one big family. And that's the scary thing. Number 7 says, the men of the city said, look at verse 10, and ye shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade ye therein, and get you possession. No, I'm sorry, looking for, verse 9 and 10 says, take our daughters, take your daughters unto us, and take our daughters unto you, and ye shall dwell with us, and I just put it this way, and we shall be one. Men of the city actually just say, hey, let's just be one. And let's go to 2 Corinthians 6, 14 and 15, Romeo. 2 Corinthians 6, 14 and 15.
Be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. Is that right?
Yes, keep going.
Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers, but what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion has light with darkness? And what accord has Christ with Belial? Oh, what a part as a believer with an unbeliever. And what agreement as the temple of God with idols. For you are the temple of living God, as God has said.
Alright, so let's look at that list. It says, what agreement hath... Now look back there in verse 14, what does it say? 14, 16. Be not unequally yoked together for what?
Yoked together with unbelievers for what fellowship? As righteousness with lawlessness.
Alright. Righteousness with unrighteousness or lawlessness. Okay. Go ahead.
And what communion is light with darkness?
Alright. Light
with darkness.
With darkness. Keep going.
And what accord is Christ with Belial?
Okay. Belial is another word for the devil. So Christ.
Or what thought as a believer with an unbeliever?
Belial. And here's a believer with an unbeliever.
And what agreement as a temple of God with idols?
All right. Temple
of God with idols.
With idols. All right. Look at all those things. All right. Now the key is, the idea is, these are not glasses. Okay. What is this that I've just drawn? You know what that is, Francis? That is a yoke. This is a very stiff board, and this is a frame in which you put two cows, or two horses, or two mules, one on each side, and then coming out of here are ropes going back to a plow, all right, or to a carriage or whatever. So this is a yoke. Would you put, Francis, would you put a mule with a horse in the same yoke? Why not? I mean, what if you only had a mule and what if you only had a horse and you put one here and one here? What would your plowing look like if you had a mule and a horse together? Well, what would happen is you'd start going straight and the mule would always be slower than the horse and all you would be able to do is that. Because a horse would always be wanting to go fast and the mule would be going... You can't yoke up... Now, if you have two mules, they'll go the same speed. You have two horses, they'll go the same speed. You don't put a cow with a horse. You don't put them unequally. So can you put a believer? Now notice, this is called a yoke. What does a yoke do? It binds them. It makes them lock together. Do you put a believer? I can put my believer with an unbeliever. Are you supposed to? Now let's use this as marriage. Now it applies to a lot of things, but here it's best to apply in a marriage. Do you get a believer? I'm not doing this right. Do you put a believer with an unbeliever in a marriage? They can be married, but one will always want to go this direction, the other will always want to go the other direction. They won't go together. Can you, as a Christian, be trying to do righteousness and unrighteousness at the same time? No. Do you mix light with darkness? No, darkness, you think of demonic stuff. You know, tarot reading, tarot card reading. And do you put Christ with the devil? No. Believer with an unbeliever? No. Do you put idols in the temple of God? No. That doesn't match. So you don't hear. Here comes Hamor, and Hamor, for his son Shechem, said, let's just share our daughters, let's get married together, let's all be one. Is that a right thing to do? No. So if you've got children and they're growing up and say, who should I marry? They need to be a believer. If you're a Christian, they need to be a Christian. I know that anybody says all you need is love. That's what John Lennon said. It's all we need is love. Well, that's wrong. Because love doesn't carry you through. It may carry you through the first 2 years or 3 years, but it won't carry you beyond that unless you have a higher power over your life, and that has to be the Lord Jesus Christ. So unequally yoked together means you don't match up unequals. Number seven goes on. Here's a unique opportunity for these two nations to dwell as one. Your fill-in was, we shall be one. And the world says, let's right or wrong. Let's just, Satan would love this. Here's the opportunity to contaminate an entire nation from which the Messiah would spring forth. And if there's one theme throughout the Bible, it is always where God has a people and Satan's trying to get in there and defile it. Try to do it with Noah, And it says Noah was perfect in his generations. He did not fall like the rest of the world at that point. All the trials and troubles endured by Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, and Rebekah are about to be cast aside in this unholy alliance. And the nation of Israel was not to marry any tribes from the land of the Canaanites. Matter of fact, where did Isaac's wife come from? From family way over in Syria instead of in Canaan. Abraham says, my son shall not marry any of the daughters from this land. You have to go back. And he sent his servant to go back. Same thing with Isaac's desire for Jacob. He said, Jacob, you got to go back and get a wife from the extended family back in Syria. Now, how does Satan carry out his plans? Well, he offers our church, and he offers every church, compromises concerning the things that God has said were absolutes. There are some standards wherein the church has no authority to change or act. One case in point is the penalty for sin. We can't change it. The wages of sin has always been death. As long as man lives, the penalty exists. Therefore, we don't have the authority to rename sin and call it something that is not. So if somebody comes along and says, hey, idolatry is not so bad, who would say that? A Roman Catholic would tell you that. Well, according to the Bible says God hates anybody that has an idol. God hates it. I can't change that. It's an absolute. But what if there's another church that says, oh, idols aren't that bad? I have nothing to do with them. That's why we're not ecumenical. We don't get along with other churches that believe differently than the Bible. If Satan can just get one member of the local church to compromise on a sinful issue, Satan has a foot in the door. If he can get one member to compromise on how they dress, to get them to accept wrong as right, to compromise on who they associate with, on how they talk or where they go, he can tear a church apart. If he can get one teen to defy their parents on any subject, it's very important. Here, we got a good group of teens, but what if one of the teenagers just goes loopy and then begins to just rebel against their parents? The other teens will go, it can influence other teenagers and go, well, you know, my dad's really stupid too. And all of a sudden, you can have a disaster. Now, here's the deception. Look at verse 13. Here we have deception from Simeon and Levi. Look at verse 13 there, Romeo.
Same chapter, is it?
Yes, still in chapter 34. I'm sorry, yeah, 34.
But the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor, his father, and spoke deceitfully because he had defiled Dinah, their sister. And they said to them, we cannot do this thing, to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for what would be a reproach to us.
Still going on? All the way down. I'm sorry, I should say down to 24.
Oh, yeah. But on this condition, we will consent to you. If you will become as we are, if every male of you is circumcised, then we will give our daughters to you. And you take your daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and we become one people. But if you will not heed us and circumcise, then we will take our daughters and be gone. And the words pleased Hamor and Shechem. Hamor's son. So the young man did not delay to do the thing, because he delighted in Jacob's daughter. He was more honorable than all the household of his father.
Keep going. Didn't it go? Are you going down to verse 24. Yes.
And Hamor and Shechem, his son, came to the gate of the city and spoke with the men of the city, saying, these men are thieves with us. Therefore, let them dwell in the land and trade in it. For indeed, the land is large enough for them. Let us take the daughters to us as wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only on this condition, we will, the men consent to dwell with us, to be one people. If every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised, will not their livestock, their property, and every animal of theirs be ours? Only let us consent to them, and they will dwell with us. And all who have went out of the gate of the city, he did Hamor and Shechem his son. Every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of his city.
Alright. Now, we've got Jacob's son speaking for Jacob. I don't see Jacob talking here, do you? Do you see Jacob making this agreement? I think Jacob is out of the picture. He's sort of still pondering, you know, what do I do, what do I do? He's wringing his hands. So Jacob's sons, and it's primarily Simeon and Levi who are scheming this thing. And deceitfully, what does that mean? What do you think that means when he says deceitfully? They spoke these things deceitfully.
Straight talk.
No, deceit means they're lying.
Yeah,
all right, so they're scheming. They have a plan. All right, and they ask all the men to become circumcised. And circumcised, they didn't ask them to believe in the God of Jacob. They didn't ask them to believe in the God of Abraham. They just asked them do a physical work, a ritual act. Do this. Now it's going to be physically, it's actually going to be the cutting of flesh, and all you have to do is do that, and then you can be, we'll get along fine, as long as you're circumcised. Would it be the same? Or let me ask, Barry, what do you think that would be applied to today if we said to a group of people, said just do this and you can be members of our church? Yes. Because it's something you can do, and if you just do this, you'll be our equals. And that's how come we have very little rituals in our... We do honor children, we do dedicate them to the Lord, and we do baptize, and we do go to church on Sunday. They can be seen as rituals. But those don't make you a Christian. What makes a person a Christian?
When you're saved.
When you get saved. Mm-hmm. And it's something in the heart. So Hamor and the men see this as an opportunity. It's a small price to pay. But that little cost is going to be enough for a few of the Jacob's sons to take advantage of them when they're hurting, when they're recovering from the surgery, and they'll be able to kill them all. And what a shame that that they would think that this is the way. But they do, and it creates a bigger problem. So let's look at verse 25. And if you'll read down to 29, faith, still in Genesis 34.
The courage of all their wives and all their women and children.
Wait, are you in 34, verse 25?
No, 29.
No, you're going from 25 to 29.
24 to 29. Oh, 24. All the men who went out of the city gates agreed with the Hamor and his son Shechem, and every male in the city was circumcised. 3 days later, while all of them were still in pain, two of Jacob's sons, Simon and Levi, Dinah's brother, took their swords and attacked the unsuspecting city, killing every male. They put Hamor and his son Shechem to the sword and took Dinah from Shechem's house and left.
Hold on, so where was Dinah? She was in Shechem's house. So she obviously doesn't feel like she can go home, or maybe he hasn't allowed her to go home. We don't know. But here come the brothers to rescue her. I don't know how she feels. This has got to be extremely humiliating. All right, just want you to get it. She
was in the house, and they'd come in and they'd rescue her. Now, they're not going to rescue her. They're like the modern movies. They're killing everybody around. They are just slaughtering everybody. Go ahead, verse 27.
The sons of Jacob came upon the dead bodies and looked at the city where their sister had been defied. They seized their flocks and herds and donkeys and everything else of theirs in the city and out in the field. They carried off all their wealth and all their women and children, taking all plunder, everything in the houses. Then Jacob said to Simon and Levi, "You have brought trouble on me by making me obnoxious to the Canaanites and the Perizzites, the people living in this land. We are few in number, and if they join forces against me and attack me, I and my household will be destroyed." But they replied, "Should he have treated our sister like a prostitute?"
Okay. So they're trying to justify the fact that they just murdered at least 30 other people. And they've taken their wives and their cattle, and they have wrought such trouble. And they says, "But should our sister be treated that way?" Listen, God, in Genesis chapter 49, God rebukes these two sons. Simeon, you got the fill-in there on number C, Simeon and Levi. God rebukes them so strongly because of their anger. Their anger took them too far. All right. So they're justifying their anger and their murder. Now Jacob's on the other side, and he's far too lenient. He says, "Now we made enemies of everybody." Yeah. Don't worry about. Worry about God. Worry about. Have you brought this on yourself? So number D is murder. This is not just. They are creating a problem. Okay. And this is murder and the spoiling of the city. In chapter 49, actually, Jacob tells them, "You two are cursed, and God cannot." Yeah, Simeon, you never hear of Simeon again, really. Simeon never accomplishes anything after this. He's just a waste of a son, and his descendants are as well. Levi is redeemed. God does use Levi as Levites, but they get no possession in the land. Number two, here we find something that is applicable to us. We should not take vengeance into our own hands, not normally. We may have every right to be angry. We may have all the laws of the land on our side, but that does not give us the right to act in the same manner as those that offend us. Now, there's a very good application here. Christian are God's chosen people in this age. It's up to us to maintain the standards established by God as found in His Word. God told us not to conform to the world, but for us to be different in Romans chapter 12. Jacob allowed the standard to fall. It reflected in the actions of his children. Who taught Simeon and Levi to have such anger? I mean, who allowed that into his home? Jacob did. Somehow, Jacob, we don't know, we can't really analyze this too far, but somehow Jacob, the environment of his children is now being exposed. And here's some points to ponder. Is there harm in our children getting out of the house, hanging down the mall, to see what the other kids of the land are doing? Is there a harm in that?
Yes.
Yes, there is. And a child will always hate his parents. You're listening, Francis? Mm-hmm. A child will always hate his parents because his parents aren't letting him do what every other kid is doing. And it may be that we are being strict, but we're also being protective. And you will do the same with your children. Believe me, I can't wait to see Kevin when he has a daughter. And he says to his daughter, she's 16 years old, and he says, "You're not wearing that. And no, you're not going to go hang around with that boy. I don't like that boy." And he'll remember Pastor and his own dad doing the same. "You're not going down. I don't like that friend of yours." And you'll remember, "Yeah, I remember being so mad at my parents." If Josephus is right about what he wrote about Dinah, Josephus says that this actually was a pagan festival that she went to go see. You know, what about the festivals? Would you allow your children to go to a rock concert? I went to one rock concert in my entire life. As an unsaved person, I went to one rock concert. And the kids after the concert went and burned cars.
Woodstock,
was it? He wasn't Woodstock. No, I'm not that old. But there must have been 20,000 people in this field. And the speakers throughout, the speakers were as big as this wall. This, not the whole wall, but about this wide, sitting up about 15 feet above the ground, pulsating into the crowd. Everybody was just... And when the music was over, they were like, let's go kill somebody, man. And it was crazy. They just started going out and they started burning cars. I you know, to let your kids go into a rock concert, we're going to go see Eminem. Can you imagine? Not if they're Christian. Christian families, we do different things, okay? Did Simeon and Levi act honorably in dealing with the men of the city? I don't believe they did. And as a father, how did Jacob respond to what was happening to his daughter? He didn't respond. Okay, all he worried about was his making money. Now, our standards. By looking at the opening verses in chapter 35, we realize that idol worship was rampant. Look at chapter 35, verse 1. God said unto Jacob, arise, go to Bethel, and dwell there. Now finally get to Bethel. And make there an altar unto God that appeared to thee when thou fleddest from the face of Esau thy brother. Then Jacob said to all his household and to all that are with him, put away the strange gods that are among you and be clean and change your garment. Put away your idols. So just look at chapter 35. There was a problem already in the home. Instead of worshiping God and was directing his family as God told Abraham to do, Jacob allowed his children to do what he wanted. As a parent, I'd much rather be busy doing something that I want to do, but I've got to be aware of what my children are doing and being able to say, no, you're not going to be able to do what you want to do. We're doing this as a family. No, you're not going to go up to your room and eat upstairs. No, you're not going to have a TV up in your room. We're all being downstairs. If you let your children do what they want, you're going to end up with a family like Jacob did. Number two, when there is sin in one area of our lives, it will carry over into all areas. It's called a little leaven, a little yeast, will leaven the whole lump. That's why it's important for Christians to act as Christians and keep sin out of our lives. We just live holy. Now, number three, here's your fill-in. Reputations are made by the company we keep. Reputations are made by the company we keep. We parents are very good at being misled by our children. We knew exactly what we did as kids, and we tried to fool our parents. Well, our children do not try to fool us because we did a marvelous job of raising them. No, we believe we're correct. We corrected the mistakes our parents made in us and how we raised our children. Think back to the day that our parents told us not to keep company with some other teens. How many times were we told that they were a bad influence? Did we listen? No, we didn't. And yet we expect our kids to listen. Just realize it's going to be a lot of work because the company our children keep will define their reputation. Your friends will make you. And if you hung around with some dope dealers, some drug dealers, what will you be known as, even though you don't do any drugs? That's right. If you hang around with some really low lives, you'll be known. So your reputation is not who you are. It's who you hang around with. Now, number four, Jacob failed as a parent. He allowed idol worship and sin to live within his house. He allowed his daughter to associate with people she had no business getting to know. As Christian parents, we need to discipline our children in the necessity of keeping company with other Christian children. My daughter has had very few friends in her life. Sarah has had, she's 17 years old in just a few weeks. She's had very few friends in her life. You know why? Because we've just not known many Christians her age. The other kids in our estate moved on. They all are drinking. They're all doing their own thing. But my daughter didn't make friends with them because they didn't want to come to church. They didn't want to sing Bible songs. They didn't want to come to Bible club. So she said very few. So every time you see Sarah with one, with Riru, or with like Vanessa's coming down this Sunday, it's like she's a twin sister, because they're very precious to her. She has very few friends. And Francis, you may not have 50 friends, but that's okay. You'll survive. Right? Just make sure your friends are good. And it's important for the dad here, sitting here, who's very determined, to determine not to fail as a parent, to say, you know, I do these things because I don't want to let you go like Jacob let his children go. Conclusion, it's up to us to maintain God's standards and not allow compromises to sneak into our homes and into our churches. Just as God had a plan for the nation of Israel, he also has a plan for us and our church. If we're living in and like the world around us, we won't do his will. Jacob was about ready to marry his daughter to one of the sons of Canaan, and it took mass murder to stop it. What will it take you? I don't think the point is, and it's a conclusion on my own, the point is, Jacob, if his sons had not taken that drastic effort, Jacob may have gone along with it. I have no idea. But I'm fearful. If my wife didn't stop me from making a wrong decision, now she may do it wrong in trying to stop me, but if she didn't stop me, what wrong decisions may have come back and haunted me later? I'm thankful for my wife. I'm thankful for people who interrupt my life. But here, obviously, it's a bit extreme. So any question? I know we covered a lot of application more. Because I want you to see, when you're reading in Genesis, you're not reading ancient history. You're reading modern life, modern parenting, and growing up. All right. We'll go on to angelology now. Take a 5-minute break. And we'll come back and go into the next lesson.